Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations, 7 days a week, here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the black market when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season and multiplied gold, silver herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these experts, all of these former presidents and public officials recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, 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 and that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in employment like jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I cashed in on our inheritance. It's time that you and I learned how to collect those benefits of the old covenant contract in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's called property, instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD, Homeschool for Adults. That's the business school. That's the CD, Home Business School for Adults. Now, while you're at it, why don't you ask for my free general law CD package? That one's free. The Homeschool on Business is not, but the CD package is. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free of charge, and I'd like to invite you to order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send an email for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the Mogambo Guru. He's a pretty funny guy. His name is Richard Dottie. You can get his newsletter. It comes free of charge. That's how much it's worth. Nothing. And it's free of charge from kitco.com. Just get onto the web, kitco.com, punch around some buttons, and you'll come to the meanest man or the angriest man in economics, and his name is Richard Dottie. And he talks primarily about inflation and the inflationary pressures that are on our economy. And he gives you names and dates and times and places and facts, witnesses, and evidence, and tells you where the bodies are buried and what's going on in life. He comes out every week. You get four of these a month. And he's pretty funny, and he's pretty interesting. And he's got something to say about Social Security in here as it relates to business. Now, listen to this. He says, throwing my stupid 2 cents into the Social Security debate, I take a gratuitous and needlessly vicious exception to Thomas G. Donlan, who is the editorial page editor and the occasional writer of editorials for Barron's, and who has written one this week called Rope a Dope. And he decries the idea to increase the ceiling on wages subject to the Medicare and Social Security tax on the wages of the high-income people because, and I quote, because you are going to love this, he says, quote, a 6.2% tax on high payrolls would afflict the nation's most productive employees, and the parallel 6.2% on payrolls would raise the cost of productive workers to the firms that hire them. What crap. Just like everybody else, bonehead. Ha ha ha. For one thing, I'm supposed to fall to my knees weeping piteously, boo-hoo-hoo, because the rich might have to pay the same percentage tax on their incomes as poor people have to pay, and this would somehow cruelly afflict the high-income employees. But at the same time, the working poor people, who can barely scrape by as it is, are not afflicted by the extent or the same extent, the same tax at the exact same percentage. For another thing, the total tax is not a measly 12.4% as he alleges, but the total bite with the Medicare surtax is 15.3%, which is also almost one out of every $6 that we ordinary trashy people make, and off the top, too. And another thing is that there is a huge difference between merely making a high salary and actually being the most productive, and often there's very little connection between the two. Enron comes to mind, and although sometimes there's a connection, as the Mogambo makes very little money and is so impossibly unproductive that he is grossly overpaid at that. But Mogambo goes on to say, I am, in contrast to Mr. Donlan, in favor of increasing the ceiling to infinity, as I see no reason why the poor, everybody who made less than $87,900 last year, should be taxed on every single dollar that they make at the full maximum rate. But a guy making $22 million, or $50 million, or $200 million, and the despicable Dick Grasso, disgraced former head of the New York Stock Exchange, springs to mind, only has to pay 2.9% on all the money that they make over $87,900. To be completely fair, the rich pay the full rate on their first $87,900 of income. It's insane to even begin to support such wildly regressive tax policy idiocy in the first place, especially in a country as ridiculously socialist as the USA, as it is just another tax, and calling it a contribution to the Social Security welfare program does not change that fact one little bit. And in the second place, the whole point is that the government is in desperate need of money, and with the class warfare redistributionist bent of Congress, you'd think they would be all over this thing. And in the third place, it's a bad, bad thing when there is a wide disparity of income in a society, and it should be embarrassing as hell to get up like this Donlan character and say that the working poor should pay a higher tax rate and higher taxes as a percentage of income than the overpaid rich, who obviously got where they are by virtue of who they know and not what they know. Unquote. All right, now that's the Mogambo. Well, let me put my two cents in worth here, Mogambo, while we're at it, and let me make a little editorial review. I did a little research on this percentage of the tax over here, and so let me flip over here to my tax section. And if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, boys and girls, it's not two taxes, it's not Social Security and income tax, it's 14 taxes that we all pay. We all pay the hidden tax. The hidden tax is 16%, just like Social Security. You know the hidden tax when you go in and you check into the motel and you pay $50 for a room that's really worth $5? That's $45 of extra taxes that have been tacked on over the last 40 years. You go into McDonald's. McDonald's pays 257 taxes on a hamburger. The government has 257 taxes on a hamburger, and you pay $1.39. It's a 5-cent hamburger. Hamburgers were a nickel in 1930. Hamburgers are worth a nickel. The other $1.34 is tax. Now let's all get our heads screwed on straight and out from between the crack of our butt, and let's start looking at reality. Then if you think that your share isn't enough for you, now let's get this. You pay 14 taxes, and you, on your $50,000 income, the government takes $30,000 and leaves you with $20,000. The government takes 60% and leaves you with 40%. Isn't there something wrong here? I mean, doesn't your common sense tell you, hey, something ain't right here? Now, this is your above-ground economy. Remember, we're talking about the black market. I'm a black marketeer. I'm in the black market. I'm going to tell you what I'm doing, and then here's what you're doing. And so the Mugambo, he's sitting here saying, I think that it's a dirty crying shame for these rich people over here who are making $50 million a year. They only have to pay 16% or 15.3% or 12.4% of that up to $87,000. I think they should have to pay the full amount on the whole thing. How about this? Why instead of saying, in effect, well, we got the red death pill and the green death pill, why don't we put in a third choice here? Why don't we make it voluntary to join Social Security? That way the poor people or the rich people can opt in or opt out anytime they want. I mean, after all, if Social Security isn't a chain letter Ponzi scheme, then there isn't any need to have everybody in it. Just the people that want to. Just the people that want to belong. Because if it's economically viable, it doesn't make any difference if there's 100 million people enrolled in the program, or 50 million people enrolled, or 10 million people, or 10 people. It'll be just as viable and it'll work just as well. The truth of the matter is that it's a chain letter Ponzi scheme. It isn't economically viable, and you have to constantly put more people into the system to pay those at the top who are now collecting more than they paid in. And then it gets worse as time goes on. Now, I've covered that a time or two. Just go to the archives and click on to Social Security. We got a number of programs, and I've covered those numbers. But what I'm going to point out here is, why should anybody be penalized by Social Security? Why should anybody pay a quarter into the program? Because you're not going to get out what you put in. For you rich people that are putting in $5, you get one back. For you middle-income people that are putting in $2.73, you get one back. For you poor people working for minimum wage, for every dollar you put in, you get 68 cents back. There's no insurance annuity that could pay you back so little for so much in the way of premiums. It's against the law. Only in the Social Security Ponzi scheme can you get ripped off like that. Now, why would anybody want to participate? And then somebody says, it's the law. You have to participate. It is not the law, and you don't have to participate. Social Security is 100% voluntary, and you volunteered when you went down and signed up. And then, when you go out into the workplace, into the economy, into the above-ground economy, you have to pay these taxes because you collect these benefits. Let me make a little suggestion. How much Social Security does Joe the drug dealer pay on his income from his heroin sales? He pays zero. And that's because he's not covered. Well, the truth is the dummy has probably got a Social Security number, and he's probably covered, and he's probably a tax evader. Now, I don't have a Social Security number, and I don't pay into the Social Security program because Social Security is voluntary. And you can't pay an income tax without a Social Security number because your Social Security number is your taxpayer identification number. And now you're going to say to me, but without a Social Security number, you can't get a job. And you're right. Who in the hell wants a job? There's no money in employment. I already told you that. By the time the government gets through taking all of your dollars away from you and your employment over here, you have to have welfare and food stamps and government benefits to make ends meet and feed your family. It makes you dependent upon government. Hey, but wait a minute. The guy that's selling drugs down on the street corner, he doesn't need Social Security, welfare, and benefits. Not from the government. He makes so much money doing what he does that he can support himself and his family. That's what the free market does. And the free market does that in spite of all of the threats, all of the imprisonment, all of the jail, all of the billions spent to stamp it out. And stamping out the free market is like trying to stamp out bacteria. You know, good luck. Get after it. Yeah, you can kill a bunch of them, but you can't get them all. Now, let me show you a little something here that maybe you didn't know about the Social Security tax. The Social Security tax is 17.8%, boys and girls. And I'm surprised at you, Mr. Mugambo, for saying that the Social Security tax is 15.3%. I know you're an economist, and I know you can add and subtract, and I know that you've been to college, and I know you're a very smart man. Now, Mr. Mugambo, you get your Texas Instrument calculator out, the one that in the last program I couldn't make mine work. At least I couldn't subtract with it. Now, get it out here and listen to this. When you're making $50,000 a year, you got to pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Now, they advertise 15.3%. So you make $50,000, and you take 15.3% of $50,000, and you write out a check, and you send that off to the income tax. Oh, you send it off to the Social Security. No, wait a minute. You send it off to the IRS, don't you? The IRS, those good folks down at the income tax office, they take your Social Security payments that you thought went into this special trust fund for you, where the government has this box on the wall with your name on it, and they take your contributions and stick it into your box. Now, you paid in $7,650 in Social Security taxes, okay? Now let's pay our income tax. Then you have to pay 17% of that same $50,000. That's another $8,500. 17% of $50,000 is $8,500. 15.3% of $50,000 is $7,650. So that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%, not 15.3%. Now, I thought you'd think that that was just real special, but let me show you what happens. If you have an income of $50,000 and you pay in $7,650 in Social Security taxes, shouldn't you then deduct $7,650 from the $50,000 and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of the $50,000 twice? Because if you pay 17% of $50,000 after you've already sent $7,650 in for Social Security, you're paying an extra $1,300 because 17% of $7,650 is $1,300. Now, that's a little bookkeeping trick. I think that's immoral and unethical. I think it's a theft. I think it's a ripoff. But then, you know, I don't make these laws, so don't get mad at me. That little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from everyone that pays this tax. Let me make a wild new suggestion. Why don't you drop out of Social Security and stop paying the 15.3%? All of the money that you've ever paid into the system, you're going to lose. And when you get to be 65, you will not be able to collect a nickel from Social Security. I mean, you're just out of it. All you young people out there, the president is out here talking to you right now as I speak, and he's telling you what you need to do is to set up this special system. You know, you got to have this special account. And if you do that, you're going to save a lot of money. And you can invest that money and you'll get paid back more for it. And you know the president's right. If you take that $7,650 a year for the next 45 years, that is the working lifetime of you young people, and you put that into treasuries at 5% interest, or a bank account, or an annuity or something, where you get 5%. Take 5% of the $7,650 compounded annually, and you're going to have $900,000 in the bank. $900,000 at 5% interest. Let me just do that. Let me get my famous Texas Instruments calculator. Here's $900,000 times 0.05 pays you $4,500. $45,000 a year. $45,000 a year divided by 12 pays you $3,750 a month forever, and you still have your $900,000. And you can leave the $900,000 to your children. Now, the last time I checked on Social Security, they told me I could have $804 a month forever, or until I get to be 75, which is when I'm going to die. So the life expectancy tables tell me. which means that I'm going to live about 10 years, collect 120 checks. Had I stayed in Social Security, I'd have paid in $153,000, and I would have collected $100,000 and paid $53,000 to have the government write me 120 checks. How much is that? $53,000 divided by 120 checks means that I got to pay $441.67 for each check that's written to me. Boys and girls, I do not need to pay anybody $441.67 to write me a check. I can do that for free, all by my little self. Now, I would like to suggest, rather than argue over who should be paying more taxes, why don't we bring the discussion down to why in the hell do we even want to participate in Social Security? Let's go and write letters to our congressmen and say, those people who want to participate in Social Security, which is every communist, every socialist, and every Democrat in America who wants to participate in Social Security, I say, love them like brothers. Let them do it. But don't make me participate in this criminal fraud with you. You people go out and participate in this dumb criminal fraud and do it all by yourselves. And then all of us conservative, capitalist, Republicans can opt out. And then we can go out and spend our money on crazy, foolish things like cigarettes and whiskey and wild, wild women. And when we get to be 65, snaggle-toothed, suffering from diabetes, sick from head to foot, with no income, no money, having squandered all of our wealth, playing the fiddle like the grasshopper, then the rest of you go down and cash your Social Security checks, laugh at me in my face, and let me starve to death. Would you, please? All right. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, I'm an old fart and I don't have Social Security. I could have retired on Social Security. I could be slopping off of the pig trough of the government welfare system. And I elected not to do that. I don't need Social Security. I don't want Social Security. I wouldn't get out of bed for $804 a month. And the thing that bugged me the most was that all of these welfare do-gooders said, you've got to participate in the program, Mr. Gordon, because it's good for you, because we know what's good for you, because you won't be able to take care of yourself when you're an old man. Listen, I paid into the damn thing, and then I let you keep the money that I paid in, and then I went out and took care of myself anyway. Even with all of the handicaps that you placed on me, I still don't need the damn thing, and I don't want it, and I don't want you to force it on me. Now, isn't that a wild new scheme? Now, that's what we call the black market. I'm in the black market. Those of us in the black market make so much money, and we make out so well, we don't need welfare, socialism, and communism. And we don't want it. Now, the reason that you have to have me in the system is because you need to take my money away from me and give it to somebody else. Now, there are 33 articulable benefits under the terms of the Old Covenant contract. Let me just give you a couple of pointers here, and let me tell you why it is that I participate in the black market, the free market, the supply and demand market, the underground economy. It's because it pays so well. And you find out about the underground economy in the Bible. I know it's crazy. I know it's ridiculous, but for those of you that are new initiates over here, why don't you just test it? Flip over here quickly to Malachi 8. Malachi 8, and let me read you a little story here. Excuse me, it's Malachi chapter 4. Malachi chapter 4, verse 8. Verse 8. Malachi's only got four chapters in it, so you'll have a hard time finding Malachi 8. Now, in case you're not a biblical scholar, you haven't been to seminary, and you don't know where Malachi is located, it's the last book of the Old Testament. So you open up the Bible, about two-thirds of the way in, you'll come to a place called the New Testament. And the first book of the New Testament is called Matthew. So if you could find the book of Matthew and just back up about six pages, about three or four, five or six pages, you'll come to Malachi. It's spelled M-A-L-A-C-H-I, and there's a chapter 4 in there. And there's this guy in here that's called God, and he wrote some words. And here's what he said in Malachi 4, verse 8. He says, "Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? And he answers, in tithes and offerings. And he says, you are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Now bring you all of the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Eternal of Hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, and neither shall your vine cast her fruit before its time in the field, says the Lord of Hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, says the Eternal." All right. So some years back, I took a look at that, and I said, uh-huh. Now, my God, the United States of America, wants me to pay the income tax. That's why... The opposite to that is called a tithe. And so the income tax is a counterfeit of tithing. Now, God, I am the creator, the guy that is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Moses, and Jacob, and so on. He comes along and he says, "Hey, listen, Gordon, if you would drop out of Social Security, give up this income tax and Social Security, and if you'll practice my law, practice tithing instead of income tax, why don't you practice increase instead of income, why don't you practice property instead of profit? I know it's a wild new scheme, and see if I won't bless you for it." And so I did that, and it pays off handsomely. I tell you, boys and girls, the free market economy works a lot better than the controlled government economy. I'm not unemployed. I'm not unemployable. I'm not threatened with my job being outsourced to India. I'm not concerned about climbing the corporate ladder. I'm not at all bothered by the glass ceiling. I'm not such a bad program at all. And I'm not selling heroin. Now, see, that heroin is also a violation of scriptural law, not just the law of the United States, but also it's called witchcraft in the Bible. It's a bad practice, and you shouldn't do that. But there's lots of common law occupations. You know, you can be carpenters and plumbers and lumbermen and buyers and sellers and traders. I mean, you know, you could go to a flea market and buy a rusty old pocket knife for $1 and then shine it up and clean it up real good and take it out and sell it to somebody for $2, couldn't you? That's called a trader at law on a cash basis. You know that if you could do that successfully, double your money, 32 times, you'd have $40 million starting with a penny. That's called geometric progression, the magic of compounding. It's a wild new concept. Listen to this, Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14. In Isaiah chapter 58... Here's this God again, and he says, "Hey, listen, to those of you that want to practice the free market economy, you know, supply and demand, the underground economy, that unmentionable," he says, "here's what I'm going to do for you." So in verse 13, he says, if you'll turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and you call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the eternal, honorable, if you will honor Him, that is, honor God, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the eternal, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the eternal has spoken it. Now, if you want to know how much money old Jake had, old Jake now was the inheritor of the birthright that he got from his daddy Isaac, who inherited from his granddaddy Abraham. Abraham had 318 servants, and he was in the cattle business. Now, I'm in the cattle business, and one man can handle 100 head of cattle. So that tells me that old Abe had approximately 31,800 head of cattle. Now, in today's market, 31,800 head of cattle, just assuming now for the sake of our discussion, the 31,800 head all were average weight 1,000 pounds. 1,000 pounds. You take 1,000 and multiply that times last week's price times 1.50, and they're worth $1,500 apiece. So if you take $1,500, average weight 1,000 pounds, and that includes the bulls that weigh 2 and the calves that weigh 500 and the newborn calves and the cows that go along with them, that's $1,500 per cow times 31,800, and that totals $47,700,000. Now also, old Abe had enough ground to carry them on. Now where I'm at, I have to have 3 acres for each head. So if I've got 31,000 head of cattle, 31,000 times 3 means I got to have 93,000 acres of land. Now land around here, where I'm from, costs approximately $1,200 an acre. So if we take that times 1,200, that takes us to $111,600,000. Now you take $111 million plus $47 million, put another zero in there, $47 million plus 111, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that gives us 147, 57, 58. That's $158 million. $158 million. Abe died, passed that on to Isaac, and I presume that Isaac, if he never added a quarter to the program, passed it on to Jacob, who, if he never added a quarter to the program, inherited $158 million. God comes along and says, I will feed you with the heritage of your father Jacob. And I said, that sounds like a pretty good heritage to me. I like being the heir of a wealthy father. I like being in the dynasty of real wealth. And I want you to notice that we're not talking about stocks and bonds and convertible mortgages or paper assets. We're talking about cattle, land, gold, silver, real property, which is what we deal with here in the real market economy. We deal in substance. We deal in property, not insurance, contracts, and commercial paper, not with debt, usury, interest, and worthless paper. We deal in the real stuff. I know it's a wild new concept for most of you, and probably beyond the grasp of most of you listening to me, but if you'll just stick around a little while, let me share with you some of the secrets that come from the Bible and why it is that America grew from 13 inauspicious little colonies into the wealthiest, most powerful, productive, political, economic, and military empire that the world has ever seen, with gold and silver coin enshrined in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, practicing free enterprise, marketplace economics. And why in just 50 years, when we left marketplace economics and adopted socialism and communism, we are now the world's number one debtor nation, on the verge of national suicide. In just 50 years, we did it to ourselves. Hey, I got to tell you a little story here. So let me flip over here and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to that homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, and one more item here. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. It's easy to remember. Or call direct, 417-273-4967. We're reviewing The Mogambo Guru, dated 3205. Mogambo Guru. You can get a copy of this. It's free of charge. I kind of kiddingly said that it wasn't worth anything. This guy's really got a good head on his shoulders, and he knows what he's talking about. And primarily talks about inflation. He's talking about the economy. Here's what's going to happen, boys and girls, if we follow these kinds of policies. You go to Flo's Whorehouse, you can just about bet you're going to come down with a sexually transmitted disease at some point in time. So, if you get married, you can just about bet little babies are going to start popping up at some point in time. You know, policies have outcomes. Wars don't happen accidentally, you know. Nations do things that make other nations angry, and then those nations get mad and they go to war. You know, the Al-Qaeda people flying airplanes into the trade towers is the outcome of policies that we've been following with Israel concerning the Palestinians over the last 50 years. Now, you can sit there and say, well, our policies are good policies. Okay, but it made a lot of other people very mad, and they came and knocked down two of your buildings for which you said, we're not going to sit still for that, and you went to war. Now, when they knocked down the two trade towers, that cost $1 trillion to our economy. The cost of the buildings and the real estate, coupled with the loss of production and taxes and productivity, that was a $1 trillion hit. And we said in America, you're not going to come over here and bust us in the nose and make our nose bleed $1 trillion worth and get away with it. So we went to war. Now, so far, we have spent $300 billion. That's one-third as much as they bloodied our nose. So far it's cost us $1,300,000,000,000. And it's the outgrowth of our policy concerning the Palestinians and a piece of real estate over there in Palestine. If you took that $1.3 trillion and divided that, see, my little Texas Instrument calculator, it ain't big enough to do it. It only has 9 spots on the dial. Take the $1,300 billion and divide that by 5,000 square miles. Yeah, that Palestine over there, well, maybe it's 7,000. It's about the size of Massachusetts. It's about 7,000 square miles of real estate that you're talking about. I think you could have bought all that real estate over there and handed it out to those Palestinians, or just gave them the damn money. I mean, how many Palestinians are there? 2 million? I think there's about 2 or 3 million of those Palestinians, and divide that into $1.3 trillion. That's just what we've spent on the trade towers, loss of business and goods and services and taxes, plus the $300 billion that we spent on the war so far. How much money have we Americans spent on that piece of real estate called Israel from 1948 until today? I mean, these guys get foreign aid every year. And we're constantly over here talking and hashing and putting carrots and dangling sticks in front of people and trying to get a peace treaty over there. I've been working on that for 50 years. Now, what do you got to show for it? I tell you, boys and girls, honest to God, I believe you could have wrote a check for $1 million for every one of them Palestinians over there and told them, here's the money, go settle any place in the world that you want to. Hell, they could have moved to Canada and retired. Now think about that for a minute. You see, the free marketplace sits here and looks at the world more pragmatically than does socialist and communist ideology and philosophy. We look at it and say, gee, what's this thing going to cost? And we come to a conclusion. The other day, a guy was in here and he said to me, well, you need to put in your own power plant. And I said, it's a good idea. I'd like to do that. And I said, how much is that going to cost? And he said, oh, I think about $30,000. Well, we got to doing the numbers. And I went to the power company and I said, Mr. Power Company, can you tell me how much you're charging me? How much are you charging me to deliver electricity? And the answer is about $2,500 a year. And how much is it going to cost me to put in this power plant, this solar power plant? Well, we got to doing all the numbers, and we found out it's $50,000. How long is this solar power plant going to last? 20 years. Well, I'll just take $50,000 divided by $2,500, and in 20 years, it's a push. Now, do I want to take $50,000 of my dollars today, put in this power plant, and then amortize it out at $2,500 a year over the next 20 years? My conclusion was that doesn't make economic sense. So I could give the same $50,000 to my wife. She'll go down the street and buy a motel. She'll turn around and sell the motel for $250,000 and do that in about 6 months or a year. She does one of those about every year or so. And she'll do it in private business. And when it's all said and done, she deals in gold and silver coin. When she gets all finished with it, she'll make her profit and gain tax-free because she's not going to go over $7,200 in gold coin. And when she gets through making these transactions and these deals over here, she'll deal in what's known as the underground economy, and she'll make more money than will that power plant make. And that's because you go to Proverbs chapter 31, and you'll find this Proverbs 31 woman. And she's about as valuable as a ruby. She's pretty valuable. And she goes out and she buys land and she fixes it up and she hires maids and maidens and she works and she keeps her husband well clothed and supports him in a status to which he would like to become accustomed. And that's what I would like to suggest here for the Mogambo Guru. You need a Proverbs 31 wife who will go out and work her heart out for you like I have. My wife goes out and works her heart out for me, and she clothes me real well and takes care of me real well, and she is now supporting me in a lifestyle and a standard to which I have become accustomed, and I want to stay right there. It's a part of the heritage of Jacob, which most of you infidels will never understand. Now, Mr. Mogambo goes on to say in the Economic Focus column this week in The Economist magazine, the Mogambo reads other economic newsletters. And then he reports some of this bad news that he keeps getting. And all of the Mogambo Guru newsletter is bad news. He never writes anything good. There's nothing good in the Mogambo Guru newsletter. It's morose. It's sickening. It's tiring. It's scary. And it's depressing. And it never makes you feel good. Unless, of course, you're a capitalist like me. Unless you're one of these black marketeers. And I read the Mogambo Guru every week and I sit in my chair. My face shines. My lips smile as I say, my God, look at the way these fools are squandering their money, inflating their currency, destroying their values, eating up their equities. Look at the opportunity for a capitalist pig like George to come in and take advantage of these socialists and communists. And I do. I have. I will. And I intend to. And the Mogambo should, could, and would if he only knew how. So why don't you write Mr. Mogambo for my free General Law CD package and let me tell you the other side of the story. You're only looking at the heads. There's another side to this coin called tails. And you know, if you're going to redistribute wealth, you have to take it away from somebody, but then where does it go? And it goes to somebody else. And it's going to go to the guy who isn't violating all of the economic laws. Now, there are 15 of these economic laws. And if you violate these economic laws, it's gonna come back and bite you. Now, let me tell you some business principles here. I got about 10, 15 minutes left. Let me share with you some business principles that come from some wise people. I've collected these over the years. Some of them come from the Bible. Some of them come from very wealthy and eminent people like John D. Rockefeller. And one that I really liked was from old Henry Kaiser. Old Henry Kaiser used to have concrete trucks. And as his concrete trucks were rolling down the street, you know, that big barrel that's got the cement in it is spinning around. And on one side of the barrel, it would say, "Find a need." Just three words. Find a need. And then when the barrel would roll over 180 degrees, three more words would appear. And it would say, "And fill it." Find a need and fill it. It's the beginning of every business enterprise. Is there a need? There's a need for heroin. And that need for heroin will be fulfilled by some entrepreneur somewhere at some price. And it just happens that the price is $1,400 an ounce right now. It was three times that 2 years ago before the Afghanis got into full production, but still there's good money to be made in heroin. And it's the free marketplace. And the free marketplace works in spite of Adolf Hitler and Joe Stalin and Genghis Khan and George Bush, and in spite of the Congress of the United States, and in spite of socialism, and in spite of communism, and in spite of all of the controls and wage and price controls and buttons and stamps and punishments and prisons and jails, the free marketplace works anyway, whether you like it or not. You can outlaw it, you can ban it, you can hate it, you can throw yourself on the floor and kick and scream and throw yourself into an apoplectic rage, and it doesn't affect it one iota. And so I looked at that one day and I said, "Oh hell, I might as well just shut up, sit down, fold my hands, and start making money." And so I did. And here's business principle number one. The beginning of all business is the offer. You got to have an offer. Would you like to buy this? Would you like to have one of these? If I went out and made 16 of these, if I grew 20 acres of potatoes, what would you do? The beginning of all business is called the offer, and all business is transacted by unequals. Two equals cannot transact business. People look at me and they say, huh, what do you mean by that? Why, that's a hard saying. It's a dark and difficult concept. All right, let me explain something to you. I've got a battery charger out here, and I go down to the Walmart store, and I'm walking around, and the salesman comes up and says, "Sir, could I interest you in a battery charger?" And I say, "No." And he says, "But this battery charger is really a good one, and look at the warranty, and look at all of the neat benefits that you get for this battery charger." And I say, "How much do you want for that battery charger?" And he says, "I want $30 for the battery charger." And I say, "Well, that's good, because I've got $30, but I also have a battery charger. So I don't need your battery charger. I'm equal with you. I've got $30 and a battery charger." And I say to the Walmart clerk, "Do you have $30? And he says, "Yes. The Walmart store has $30, and I say, "Well, would you like to buy my battery charger?" And he says, no, a thousand times no. I don't want to buy your battery charger. Why, yours is used. Why, yours isn't even in your car. It's at home, and you got to go get it. And we've got a battery charger, and it's right here." He can't sell me one, and I can't sell him one, because we're equal. You follow that? Now, I walk into my local Walmart store, but my battery charger broke last night, and my battery charger doesn't work, and I've got lots of batteries to charge. And now the clerk comes up and he says, "Would you like to buy the Walmart battery charger for $30? And I say, "Yes, yes, because we're unequal, because you have battery chargers and I don't have a battery charger, and I need a battery charger, so therefore I will pay you $30 for your battery charger." All business is transacted by unequals. Now, number three, if the offer is good, take it as is. I wouldn't walk out of the store without a battery charger because I offered him $25 and he wouldn't take it. Number four, never just refuse the offer. Make a counteroffer if you don't like the offer. So always make a counteroffer. You know, if you want to buy a piece of real estate and the guy says, "I want $35,000 for it," and you say, "Well, now I'll give you $29,000," the guy ought to come back with a counteroffer that says, "Well, I won't take $29,000, but I would take $31,500. And then pretty soon you say, "Well, I won't pay $31,500, but I would pay $29,900. You know, pretty soon you guys can work out a middle ground somewhere, can't you? You know, most people today, they don't know how to deal, they don't know how to buy and sell, they don't know how to trade. They walk into a store and if the label on the item there says $29.95, they just pull out their credit card and pay $29.95. When I walk into a store, the first thing I want to know is, "Do you take Visa or MasterCard?" And when the guy says, "Oh yes, yes, we take Visa or MasterCard," I reach in my pocket and I pull out the cash and I say, "Good. Now deduct 6% from this price that you're offering this for, because I'm going to pay cash instead of credit card, so that you won't have to pay the 6% to the bank for making the credit card transaction. So I save 6%. And that's because this guy has already priced that 6% into the price of the goods. And he charges it to everybody, whether they pay cash or whether they pay with credit cards. Unless, of course, you're smart enough to tell him, sir, "I'm going to pay you with cash, so don't charge me the 6%. And he won't, and he'll make the sale, and you'll save 6%. All business is transacted with an acceptance. So when somebody makes you an offer, you have to accept. So when a good deal comes by, don't fail to accept it. And never accept a deal that you can't perform your end of. You know, there's so much business that's conducted by people today, and they make promises, and then they don't fulfill their end of it. That's bad business. You know, when you and I make a deal and you fail to hold up your end of the deal, it'll be the last transaction that you and I are ever going to engage in. But if you fulfill your end of the deal, then you can come back and you and I can do business again and again and again and again. And that's where the profit lies. It's in being able to do business over and over and over again without any cost of goods sold. Yeah, that's right. I don't have to go out and advertise and generate and create new customers. They just keep coming back. If I've got a good school with a good product, and if I've got a good piece of information to give you, my customers just keep coming back. I sell 8 schools. My objective is to sell you one and to show you how good that school is, how much you learned, and how much you're going to profit from it. So you'll come back and do a second, a third, and a fourth. And that's where the money is made. The best business is repeat business, number 7. Repeat business. Let me repeat that. The best business is repeat business, number 8. You never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. You know, if you stop and think about it, people are out here making deals and they're just sad and sorry. "Oh God, I lost money on this, and gosh, the price of this is going up, and Social Security." You know, Social Security is a bad deal. And I don't do business with thieves. And if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. And since I don't do business with the mafia, I don't do business with government either. The mafia is a criminal institution. Government is a criminal institution. You do business with the government and you get stolen from. They rip off $1,300 extra dollars when you do business with Social Security and income tax. They take 33% of everything you create and produce. They give you nothing in return for it. Or they give you back a whole lot less than they promised. you know, you take $5 from a guy for his old age retirement and then give him back one out of every five and you rip off four, that's not a very good business deal, is it? That's government offering you Social Security. That's a theft. That's bad business. Never do business with a thief, and you'll never be stolen from. And you've never lost any money on any deal you didn't make, but you've lost some money on some deals that you wish you hadn't made. Never charge interest and never pay interest. That comes from the Bible. Oh, yeah. Never charge interest and never pay interest. You know, most of you people out there could increase your standard of living by about 18% by just paying cash instead of buying on a credit card. You ever stop to figure out how much you're paying? I saw one the other day that worked out the numbers, and they said, if you charge $10,000 on this credit card at 27% interest and pay the minimum monthly payment, you can amortize this out in 27 years after you've paid 16 times the amount that you borrowed. $10,000 at 27% interest will amortize out in 27 years and cost you $160,000. Woo! Where do I sign up? Where can I get one of those gold cards? You know, poor people like me, we can't afford that kind of largesse, so I just pay cash for everything I do, and I pay it in gold and silver coin. And when I buy, I sell, and I trade, I keep my income under $7,200 a year, I don't have to file a tax return, I can obey God, keep His commandments, and I don't have to write newsletters every week, Magombo, bitching and complaining about the inflation rate. I know, it's a wild new concept. Number 11, do unto your customer that which you would have your customer do unto you. I stole that right out of the Bible, where it says, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And I figured, I wonder if that would work with my customers. So when I have a student come in here, I say, well, gosh, if I was the student and that guy was the teacher, how would I want him to treat me? And I'd do the same thing. And by God, I found out that my customers, my students, they like that. And they keep coming back. Now, when you're a seller, always deliver more than you agreed to. So when I'm the seller, I'm the teacher, you come to my school, and I tell you, well, here's the tuition, and here's what I'm going to give you. I had a student come in here, and I gave him some business principles out of this business class, and he said to me, he said, that one piece of information was worth as much as the tuition in this course. And I said, of course it is. And besides that, I'm going to give you four or five more of those that are going to make you $2,000 each, or 10 times that amount. As life progresses along and you keep using these business principles, you're going to make $2,000 or $4,000 or $10,000 using that principle on these various deals. And I didn't charge you anywhere near that. Yes, just one or two of these business principles will make you as much money as you're going to make, or as much as you're going to spend on this class. So let me just put a little arrow right here, so that when we come back next time, we'll take it up right here. We're just about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it. And we'll come back and we'll talk a little more about the Magombo and the black market, and how you can profit from the black market, also known as the free market, or the supply and demand system, or the underground economy. Remember that the beliefs and opinions, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. GeorgeGordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, you've been listening to the Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to the website GeorgeGordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Time's up. I gotta go. See you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.